Hello, supply chain enthusiasts. Today we have with us Professor Justin Goldstein from Penn State. Professor Goldstein, could you introduce us and tell us a little bit about your areas of interest?
Yes, thanks, Chris, and thank you for having me on the discussion. I am a professor of project supply chain management at Penn State University. We do a lot of research in emerging technologies such as blockchain and artificial intelligence. And we also do a lot of research in terms of sustainability practices and the emerging developments in terms of sustainability from a supply chain perspective. So there's a lot of good things coming out of Penn State, and I look forward to talking with you on some of those today.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So in addition to your work as an academic, I know that you've worked with major companies to transform their supply chains, from Blue Buffalo to Intel and Siemens. What first sparked your passion in supply chains, and in particular in digital transformation of supply chains?
Well, my story is very interesting in that I was a computer science major in undergrad, and I also had a baseball scholarship at North Carolina A&T State University. And because we were traveling on Wednesdays to our away games, we also had mandatory computer lab in the spring. So whenever I went to the department chair of engineering, I said, I travel for baseball on Wednesdays. You know, and he said, okay, make a choice between baseball or computer science. And I said, well, you're not paying for my scholarship, so I'm out. So one of my teammates actually was in the supply chain program at North Carolina A&T. It was a young program. And it was very interesting and intriguing. And once I began the first class, you know, we were talking about things that I did. My father was a plant manager in North Carolina. So whenever I was in the class, I said, I did this stuff in high school. I mean, I get it. I can dig this, right? So the rest is history from a supply chain management perspective. But as it pertains to digital transformations, I had a professor at North Carolina A&T, Dr. Tracy Rischel, where she was a consultant, and she essentially brought the content to life. She talked about the book says this, 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 and this. This one manufacturing organization, we were implementing an ERP application and, you know, we did this. So it was very interesting to me. And then that led to me beginning out as a consultant out of undergrad. So I began consulting for International Business Systems, now known as EPTOR, based in Sweden. And then I went on to implement applications at Infor, then their suite of products. And that led me to work with organizations such as Blue Buffalo, Intel, and Siemens. I would say that Blue Buffalo was my claim to fame in terms of supply chain management, in that we developed their supply chain network, developed their ERP infrastructure. And funny story is that whenever we started at Blue Buffalo, I never forget that, you know, they celebrated breaking 100 million back in 2007. Mm-hmm. They were just sold to General Mills 3 years ago for $8 billion. So I always joke to say, you know, I was a part of that, right? I was a part of the early days of that. And, you know, I can appreciate you keeping the test to see the growth from, you know, an organization from startup to seeing their success. So with that leads me in, what made you build digital platforms for customs clearances?
Well, it's largely out of the frustration of dealing with existing ways of doing things. You know, they say if you look towards some pain point you've personally experienced, you've probably found a problem that other people have. The whole way I got into supply chain and looking at the technology, and way back in 2007, I was doing principal technology investing at a hedge fund, and my boss calls me in and asks me to go take a look at a piece of software at a small 3PL. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go take a look at that, especially because the 3PL was based in Florida and it was February or March in New York City.
I was like,
that's an easy choice. I'll go spend a week there. And I went down, and when I got down there, the first thing I saw was there was an employee who was trying to photocopy a document, and the document had been torn in two. And she was trying to line up the documents so that all the numbers would match and so that she could fax it. The reason that it had gotten torn was because she was trying to fax the document in the first place and somebody hadn't put it through a sheet feeder. Mm. So I look at this and I'm like, huh, this is going to be an interesting technology journey when people are faxing documents. I asked her if I could help her, and she says, she was obviously quite distraught. And she shows me this piece of paper, and right where the document had been torn, there was, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4% of the actual paper of the document was missing, which meant there were a whole bunch of numbers that just didn't exist anymore. They're sitting back at the scanner of like some fax machine. Mm-hmm. And then I asked, I said, well, you know, is this an important document? She said, oh yes, very. And I'm like, I hope you can go ask somebody for it. She's like, oh no, I can't. And once I understood what this document was, it was a bill of lading, the controlling document in logistics. And somehow the systems were so archaic that people were faxing back and forth critical information to a shipment that probably they paid thousands of dollars for transportation of, and that was transporting tens of thousands of dollars of merchandise. And right there, I took a look at it and I said, you know, there's something to do here in supply chain. It's one of the spaces that has not yet caught up to where we see consumer or many other businesses. And when we started looking into which of the processes is the most in need of help, not to say antiquated, we looked at customs, because people look at customs like, you know, it's something we got to do anyway. It's a regulated business. It's a compliance practice. So there hasn't been as much innovation in customs as there have been in a lot of other places. Yet customs is a business that's all about information collection, management, sharing, and transmission. And that lends itself extremely well to all tools that are essentially information management or information technology tools. So we chose customs because it was a thing that nobody else wanted to touch.
Right. It's working out for you. How has it? Because technology moves so quickly, how has this technology developed since you began developing this solution?
Well, it's sort of interesting. 3 years ago, if you walked into a typical investment, you know, if you walked into a venture capitalist office and you said, listen, we're here to like fix customs, they looked at you and they either thought you were the stupidest person in the room or that you were crazy. Nobody wanted to touch this. In the interim, there's been Amazon acquired one of our competitors, a company called Inlet, and they're not integrating that into their general service offering right now for Amazon importers. But you can imagine, Amazon just got an NVOCC license. They already operate a pretty large fleet of aircraft. And I don't know how it is out east, but out west, I'd say somewhere around 10% of the trucks on the road have an Amazon Prime logo on it. So those guys are going out big, and they view customs as being part of their service offering. We've also seen a bunch of other companies pop up, and everybody is thinking along fairly similar lines of automating certain parts of data collection, allowing compliance processes to be run on data sets, triangulating information amongst different data sources. So now, you know, it's evolved. There's a fair number of people that are coming into the space. And right at the same time, we're all of a sudden having a whole bunch of really interesting new technologies that are coming up. The advent of OpenAI's imminent release of GPT-3 looks like it's going to come in and start triggering a whole bunch of new use cases for, you know, natural language processing tools. That should help us understand a lot of what's going on in documents. And then something which, you know, I've seen from your TEDx presentations that you're really interested in, blockchain is also coming in. It's now sort of blockchain that's getting back to the original meaning of it, not so much the cryptocurrency meaning, but this idea of these ledgers that allow inputs of information, electronic contracting and whatnot. Speaking about that, you know, I noticed that you really seem to be very, very passionate about blockchain and about its transformative potential. What are you looking at right now, and what's really piquing your interest?
I think that I look for every use case possible in terms of using these emerging technologies for good. In terms of artificial intelligence, machine learning, blockchain, if it can positively impact society, if it can positively impact the world, I'm all for it. Now, as it pertains to tracking and tracing within the maritime industry, that's blockchain for good, right? Because now we're able to understand what's on these container ships. And now the consumers are able to understand what's in their shipments, right? It's not just the customers. It's not just the distributors. It's the end consumers that can see this information. And I think that that's an absolute game changer. And the most important thing is that with blockchain, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Because a lot of these use cases are transferable to different industries. So we have Walmart work with IBM to track and trace produce based on lot number. So we could take that base code, right? And we could kind of cater and adjust that use case to fit our needs within, regardless of, based on what industry we're in, for example. right? I will say that, you know, you can't create a blockchain use case for every single thing. It has to make sense, right? It has to scale. So that's one of the issues that we're having within the supply chain industry for blockchain, for artificial intelligence, for machine learning. You know, we have a scalability issue. So that's one thing that we're researching right now. That's one thing that we're working on. But people say it's cliche to say, you know, the opportunities are limitless. They are. You know, and another important thing I would like to discuss is that, you know, I did 5 TED Talks last year, and some of the things that I spoke about on blockchain are already obsolete. And that's the truth, that it's changing that quickly. And we talk a lot about, you know, smart contracts and things like that, but smart contracts are evolving into intelligent contracts because we're now integrating artificial intelligence within smart contracts. So in some cases, these smart contracts are becoming obsolete. So I actually developed a blockchain course for an institution. We had to change the curriculum to say, you know, yeah, we have smart contracts, but the future is we have intelligent contracts. So that's another important thing from a higher education perspective in that we have to keep up with the industry. With these developing technologies, with supply chain management, we have no choice. We can't just develop a course in 2015 and let it run. You can't do that. You have to keep up with the industry.
So you mentioned IBM. You know, IBM and Maersk, they have the TradeLens joint venture. Mm-hmm. And when you look, we're looking at working with them to help them provide customs clearance to people who are using TradeLens.
Wait a minute. Can you expand that a little bit?
Sure. IBM and Maersk got together sometime, I think around 2015, 2016, and they decided to produce a blockchain or distributed ledger-based solution that would take information that runs across global supply chains, put it onto one platform, and allow people to share information across various validated nodes and parties. They have recently expanded it. I believe just last week, I think they announced that MSC and CGM have also joined. So they now have, collectively call it 40% of global ocean container capacity using one platform. And what it looks like you're able to do is you can go on, let's just say that you're a shipper and you're using either Maersk or MSC or CMA CGM, and you want all of your information and all your document flow to be managed on this new platform, which also records everything to a blockchain. You can now, for example, you can have your manufacturer share all their information related to a commercial invoice back into the system. You can extract that from the system, and you know that the information comes on the commercial invoice comes directly from the producer, supplier, manufacturer. For customs, this is huge because nobody's anymore going to be saying, oh, sorry, you know, we made a mistake about this, we made a mistake about that. You know exactly from which node it comes from, you know exactly who signed it, you know what time of day they updated it, and you know if it's been changed along the way. TradeLens is in many ways the embodiment of possibility in terms of document management and workflow management on blockchain or distributed ledger systems. And now it's got 40% of global capacity being able to use this information technology, coupled with the clients over at IBM, who are going to have the staff who can explain how to implement this at large enterprise scale, I think is huge. And it's not only about cost savings. Yes, there's certainly the benefit of electronic document management, electronic bills of lading, which are on their way, smart or intelligent contracts, which pull information from all these parties via a trusted source and allow you to auto-execute contracts, initiate payments. All those things are great, but there's a whole second layer of visibility that comes in. If you're the importer or your customs or you're an insurance company, you can now look and see into a transaction and understand everything that goes on with every single interaction. Whereas before, you had to rely on people to send you emails, give you updates, and it would take time. And assuming people were willing to send you the information you requested, it was going to take days, weeks, or months to obtain this. And to some extent, you're reliant on people's goodwill and good faith to make sure you had accurate stuff. So I think TradeLens is going to be huge.
And where do you come in with this TradeLens partnership?
So TradeLens is building a business that is not dissimilar to the Google App Store or the Apple App Store or the marketplace that Salesforce has built. They've built an open architecture, which anybody can learn about. Anybody can write anybody can plug into the system, provided they sign up with TradeLens, and you can learn how to pull information and submit information into the system. For us, if we, for example, if a customer of ours is using TradeLens for their document flow and execution, rather than email somebody and say, hey, I need you to send me an updated packing list because I heard that something changed, my contact over the fact is, oh yeah, we changed that. You got to go call somebody else and see if it's been updated. If I can get updated packing list information because that supplier updated it out of their ERP directly to TradeLens, that's going to be my best and most accurate information. If I need to file ISF information, which you need to file 24 hours before any container bound for the US, but a ship has changed. Now, with COVID, there's been a lot of disruption to shipping. And often the ocean carriers, if their ship only had 30% of the containers loaded up, that ship is not going to sail that day. There's no way they're going to lose that much money in like fuel oil. They'll make it wait a day or two. And this happened a lot, especially in March, April. Well, when the information about which ship a container is on changes, you now have to update all that information. And that means that somebody over at the carrier has to inform somebody over at the freight forwarder, who has to inform somebody over at the customs brokerage, hey, this container is no longer sailing on that ship on Tuesday. It's sailing on this ship on Thursday. If I can instead get that information straight from the carrier, now listen, the sailing's been canceled and it all updates, I can update all my documents. And I know it's the most up-to-date information because the person who physically has that container has just told me it's not on that ship, it's on this ship instead. So for us, being able to get high quality documents and being able to offer to our importers knowledge that their compliance needs are being taken care of, because I can tell you where every document comes from, is huge. So we're essentially like a vendor that's attached to the system.
Right. Excellent. And that was one of the things I was thinking about in terms of, because blockchain is based on consensus, right? It's based on trust. I was wondering, okay, where is that consensus? But you did explain that, where it's coming from the brokers, it's coming from the vendors, it's coming from the freight carriers and things like that, the freight forwarders. So I now get that. Now, whenever we talk about blockchain, the big thing is a permissioned versus a permissionless blockchain, where a permissionless blockchain would be one where anyone could sign in and see that shipment. Now, is this going to be a permissionless blockchain where I could log in and see where my shipment is at any given point in time, or is it permission because I'm the customer, right? That's bringing in this, it's my container, right? So I'm going to be within that blockchain network, right? Or is it me sitting at home and I can log in at any given time just being curious?
So I suspect that there might be a hybrid situation. You know how you go onto like FedEx's website and you just plug in a number and it tells you the status of where it's coming? I don't think it's going to be quite that light, because people don't want information about their private trade flows being publicly accessible. You can imagine a situation where if it was permissionless, somebody could log on, try and scan all shipments that were coming in into Samsung, and try and say, okay, I now see that Apple Computer has shifted buying their monitors from from Samsung, that their panels, to moving it over to LG. And then that might influence people's trading decisions. That might say, oh, well, that's useful information to know. So I think it's going to have to be permissioned, and I think it's going to have to be strongly permissioned, whereby every single person who can access the information is accessing it once they've been vetted and authorized.
Right.
Does this mean that it will be impossible for an importer or somebody who's bringing in goods to have access to all that information? No, but I suspect you're going to have to go log into FedEx, and FedEx is going to say, they're going to log in. They say, we pulled this information on your container from TradeLens, and here's the information you want. So it's going to be filtered, just because you can't have, most people don't want you knowing about their business. And
right.
It's definitely one of those situations.
So people ask me all the time, why is there not much adoption to blockchain? And you hit the nail on the head with that one. People don't want people to know in their business, right? And there was one country in South America where they were running a blockchain pilot, and the blockchain project uncovered government corruption. The government shut it down.
Yeah, you bet.
They snitched on themselves. So that's why I mean, I'm just being real. We're being transparent here, right? And I think that that's why some organizations are slow to adopt these blockchain applications, to be completely honest. And that's another thing, you know, it's kind of the same concept where, yes, everyone wants to do this sustainable reporting, but very few do the third-party audits. Uh-huh. And, you know, so blockchain is essentially that technological audit, mm-hmm. because everybody has to reach consensus to say, yes, this transaction is correct. But many companies don't do it. You will see an increase, you know, in the adoption.
I think we're at an interesting time. Global commerce has gotten to be very, very complex. And in the past couple of decades, but probably in the US, certainly sparked by 9/11, government has decided that they want to see where things come from, who should. Mm-hmm. They don't just want to collect their tax revenue, but they were pretty good at collecting revenue before in the form of imports and duties. They now want to know, where did those garments come from? Who supplied the fabric? Who supplied the labor? Was it made using coerced labor? Was it made using conflict minerals? Was it made in a country, or was it made from raw goods that came from a country on whom we have an embargo right now? They want to see everything that's going on. And 40 years ago, the technology solution simply did not exist to give people that granular visibility. Right. But now they do. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got like a phone in their pocket. That phone is essentially a node or a terminal on a giant IP network. You can collect all sorts of information on that. And now that those tools exist, they're coming back and saying, you know what? Before we didn't make you prove that the origin of the iron was from a company we knew, but now we're going to. And at the same time as government is going to push for this, you know, the current environment is one that is very, very much in favor of more corporate social responsibility on the part of big companies. And the companies that succeed are going to be the people who can demonstrate, yes, we did not buy, you know, I did not buy that fabric from a mill in some country that is essentially keeping people in a prison camp to do it. Because consumers don't want that. What's the benefit of having your fancy new set of sneakers if you later on discover that it was, you know, some children that are shackled to like a desk that are making it? Nobody wants that. So the big companies are going to drive this eventually. And eventually that means their smaller suppliers are also going to have to become compliant and the governments will demand it. I think that in spite of the risks to liberty of having information be exposed and easily searchable, that the benefits we're going to see flow down societally from accountability about what people do, how they do it, where they make their money, how they make their money, who they made it with, is a force that we're not going to be able to stop and that we will all probably be better off for it.
Right. Yeah, and that's one thing. So I am doing a presentation on supply chain sustainability next week, and I'm talking exactly about that. But another thing is I've created corporate social responsibility courses for Georgetown, for Rasmussen University, and I've come to discover that we need to take the corporate out of it. And we need to practice social responsibility, because when we say corporate social responsibility, the individual says, okay, we're going to wait for the Unilevers to fix it. We're going to wait for the Levi Strauss to fix it. We're going to wait for the Patagonias to fix it. But they can't fix the world. It has to start with each one of us. And whenever you say corporate social responsibility, you're missing 99% of the organizations in the U.S., right? The small and medium enterprises, right? If you switch it to social responsibility, now it's the responsibility of everyone. If we look at it through that lens, I think that we're going to make a bigger change. And if, like you said, if the consumers demand it, there's going to be a change, right? And I think that that's where social responsibility is going to drive this industry. It's going to drive blockchain within maritime, right? Because they want that visibility.
It's true. And the other thing that people often overlook is if we eliminate waste and pollution, that's also good business just from a balance sheet perspective.
Absolutely.
If you do better tracking of your inventory and of your materials, and you can reduce the amount of fabric that goes to waste, you've just saved money. So I think it's not only about social responsibility aspects, but a lot of companies and a lot of people are going to want the cost savings that come from more efficiency. I think there might also be environmental benefits. Once people are able to properly identify the people who are responsible for polluting, cost will be allocated to them. And the externality of environmental pollution will increasingly not be essentially an externality, because you'll be able to tie it down. You'll be able to say, you know what? You guys operated a factory. this factory was polluting. You knew it was polluting because it, you know, you'd had the audit and you'd had that assessment done, yet you still made 5 million pairs of shoes. And therefore, we're going to attribute the cost of that pollution, this cleanup, to you. So you might think you made $20 a pair off those shoes, but by the time you factor in that actual cost and you deal with the true cost of it, you lost $20 a pair on those shoes. Are you going to do that polluting again, or are you just going to make sure you get your systems right?
Right. It's like, so we always talk about lean and eliminating non-value added activities. And this is exactly what you said. Pollution is non-value added. So why are we dropping millions in cleaning up our act? Right. So yes, that's one thing that we talk about when we talk about sustainability, where you hit the nail on the head in that you don't track how much it costs you to clean up your act. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you're losing money. If you just fix it. And the thing is, I would say the most important thing in business is that we're too laser focused on that short-term gain. And if we invest in sustainable practices on the front end, yes, it may take 5 years for us to get that return on investment. But once we hit that ROI, boom,
yep,
we're in the stratosphere, right? But leaders don't think that way. But we're going to have to.
Professor Goldston, thank you so much again. This has been very, very informative.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to the next discussion.
Enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right, you as well.